If you don't mind, like I say, I'm calling this meeting to order and in place of the Pledge of Allegiance. And today's a beautiful day, nature wise. I probably could have done America the Beautiful, but Haley, why don't you go ahead and post that the first stanza for This Land Is Your Land, the Woody Guthrie tune. So everybody just go ahead and repeat these lyrics with me if you don't mind. This land is your land. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. And I just want to say something about the way things are in our country right now, in this land, something I think that we would all hope for and strive for. And that's that freedom, justice, equality, and reverence for Mother Earth and the land that we live on will ultimately prevail in both our actions as we continue to move forward in this, what will be an exceptional decade on planet Earth. We have a quorum. All five of the members of the board are in attendance. Anyone have any additions or deletions to today's meeting, to today's agenda? Seeing no hands raised, we'll go to acknowledgments, and we actually have two today. Let's go to the one that was has been already planned, and Vice President Steidel or General Manager Weigold can lead this.
If I may, Jim Weigold, I'd just like to present Ted Siegler, who is the chair of the Finance Committee, who will be making the commendation announcement for the finance group. And Haley, if you could have Ted join us, that would be great.
Good afternoon, directors. Thank you very much. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, I'm not the chair of the finance.
Vice chair.
I'm the vice chair, along with Director Steidel, who is the chair, and committee members Marvin Corn, Dwayne Lee, Mary Maher, and Cheryl McDowell. And we have had the good fortune over the last couple of years to see a renaissance in the financial controls of the district, and felt it was a good opportunity to send a letter of commendation to the district. I'll go ahead and read the letter that we unanimously approved. During the recently ended 19/20 fiscal year, the Finance Committee has had an opportunity to review and discuss a significant number of financial documents generated by the CCSD staff. We noted essential positive changes compared to history, which should be acknowledged. The quality of the fiscal budget and the associated spending controls are an unmeasurable step forward. Recording of budgetary requests by operating departments has enhanced planning. Establishment of the quarterly budget review process providing a valuable tool in evaluating incremental district performance. Financial information presented to the Finance Committee is clear, concise, and reliable. Again, a significant step forward. Enterprise fund, budgetary, and financial information is clearly compared to the Prop 218 rate increases and highlights controls for spending on necessary deferred maintenance, upgrades, and other capital improvements. As a committee, we understand these improvements and many others result from significant effort by the CCSD's finance team, its department managers, and the collaboration between the advisory committees. We provide this letter of commendation to acknowledge that your efforts have established stronger fiscal controls for the district and more robust communication tools between the CCSD staff and the community. The committee truly appreciates what you have accomplished. We commend the contributions made by Pam Duffield, Finance Manager, Nancy Gravender, Financial Specialist, Payroll and Benefits, and that's Annette Young, Administrative Technician 3, Accounts Payable and Accounts Receivable, Miriam Orozco, Administrative Technician 3, Utility Billing and Front Desk. Again, thank you all for your dedication and the quality of your work.
Thank you, Ted.
You're welcome.
And I'd like to extend my personal thanks also to Pam, Nancy, Annette, and Mary, and Miriam. They've all been a great support to the Finance Committee team, and I think have served a valuable asset to the CCSD community as a whole. So thank you again.
Thank you, Ted, and thank you, Vice President Steidel, for suggesting this. We'd like to go to another acknowledgement at this time, and Director Rice.
I would appreciate if we could have a moment of silence. I don't know if people were aware or not. Supervisor Adam Hill died last week. I just would like to have a moment of silence. He very publicly struggled with his depression and getting treatment. And I just urge anybody who is feeling desperate or depressed, doesn't matter if it's just sad or forlorn or something really more extreme, please talk to somebody, anybody you can call. There's an 800 number, 800-273-TALK. There's a texting number. You just text HOME to 741741, and you can have a text conversation with a real human being. Supervisor Hill was also a champion for those who were less fortunate, the homeless, people who did not have the resources to take care of themselves. And there's a real loss in this county for his passing. So if we could just have a moment of silence, I would appreciate that. Thank you. I just want to again remind folks there is help. You can talk to a stranger or a friend. Doesn't matter. Please reach out to somebody if you're feeling desperate, because you don't need a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Thank you, President Palmer.
Thank you, Director Rice. I would just make this comment that probably never in the time of this nation have people been struggling more with, you know, how could we say it, emotional, psychological, as well as economic challenges. And anyone that has already been struggling with difficult, like I said, mental health and emotional issues is probably feeling it even more deeply at this time. Let's just hope that what we're going through at this moment brings us all closer together with greater empathy and compassion. And I pulled a couple of quotes here from Albert Einstein, of all folks, who we see as a scientist, but the man was so much more than that, just an observer of humanity and the human condition and the planet that we live on. And considering that Adam Hill is known mostly for his service to this county and to his constituents in the area where he lived. This is a quote from Albert Einstein, "Only a life lived for others is a life worthwhile." And Director Rice was talking about him being a spokesperson for the homeless and for folks dealing with mental illness, but he'll be permanently remembered for establishing the Pismo Preserve. So I have found this other quote, where people are going to hike and enjoy being close to nature. So Albert Einstein says, look deep into nature, and then you will understand everything better. And no doubt, you know, that includes a deeper understanding of ourselves, as well as our connection with the planet, with Mother Earth, with one another in the higher consciousness. Those are my comments. And thank you again, Director Rice, for bringing this to our attention. All right, let's move on to reports and the PROS chairman's report. And Steve Niffen, you're out there and available, yes?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, thanks for having me. I think that most of the stuff that I'm going to have to say, we can say in the agenda item that's going to come up later. So in the idea of expediency, I'd like to defer my comments till later. But there's a couple of people, the skate park people, a couple of them that would like to say a word or two, if I may let them. They are in Colorado and Utah, I think, and they're up on some mountain and they're getting reception. So if I can just let them say hello, they want us to acknowledge that they're here and they're putting in their effort. So Cher Tatham, I think, and maybe Julie Amade is on the line.
All right. No, it's not public comment time. I don't see any problem there. Is Cyrus there also?
It looks like Cyrus is there.
All right, folks, go right ahead from high up there in Colorado.
Need to
Shara, you're muted.
Ah, there you go. I was still muted.
Okay, hi there. Shara and Cyrus are here. We're actually in Washington State. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Just say I want to let you know.
I just wanted to let you guys know that we're still doing the skate park rally, and we still want the skate park to be rebuilt, and that there's a bunch of people getting together to do this thing, and we hope that you guys can join the parade.
Did you get that? We're at a shaky connection.
Yep, sounds good, Sharon. That's great.
Yeah, you came in loud and clear.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for making the effort. So other than that, I don't see Julie on here. Julie said she'd try to make it to get on to the agenda item. So I think I'll just dispense with that and wait till then.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve.
Yeah.
And thanks for sticking around till the end of the meeting. That's probably a first, right?
Yes, I expect kudos for that. I'll be here.
Okay, thank you, Steve. You know, you just had somebody stick their hand out of a closet there. That was kind of bizarre, but we'll just move forward. Let's move on right now to a brief comment from our general manager and an update from him, Mr. Weigel.
Thank you, President Farmer. I just wanted to add an extra update from my office here on a couple of important issues in addition to my regular report that'll come next board meeting. First, on COVID-19, due to the increase in virus cases both in the county and the community, we've increased our efforts to keep the staff and community safe. And this includes limiting interoffice contact between departments and also increased monitoring at each location on a daily basis. We've also reclosed our public restrooms and reinstalled porta potties there at those locations to minimize staff exposure. Further, I would like to make an apology to the board, my staff, and the community in an effort to assure the public that the district is taking appropriate measures to protect employees and the community from COVID-19. I misguidedly posted something that was too transparent on social media earlier this week. It was a mistake, and I wanted to apologize publicly for doing so, and I can assure you it won't happen again. next subject I have is on light utility bills and payments. As a result of the continued pandemic, the board had granted me authority to take a look at late fees for late payments of utility bills and the shutoff. And as a result of this pandemic continuing, I've extended that policy of not imposing late fees for late payments of CCSD utility bills. And I've continued our policy of no shutoffs for non-payment, which is, remains in line with the state requirements. Lastly, I wanted to bring the fire chief to the board meeting here to talk a little bit about our recent fire and a matter of taste. I thought it was timely because I wanted to really point out how fortunate we are to have a fast response from this department. This fire could have easily spread quickly. We're in fire season, and I'd like to remind everyone to continue to exercise extreme caution in their day-to-day lives. Our thanks go out to our first responders for minimizing and containing this recent emergency. Chief, over to you. I'd like you to talk us through a little bit more about your experiences and takeaways. Thanks very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you, John. Thank you, President Farmer and Board, for letting me be here today. John asked that I give you a quick update on what occurred the other day. As most of you know, on Saturday the 1st, we responded to what turned out to be a commercial structure fire. Initially, it came in as just a vehicle into the building, and prior to them getting on scene, that quickly escalated to a much more serious condition. The vehicle, unfortunately, the driver lost control and drove into the rear of the building after hitting another parked car. The problem with this incident specifically was that in that exact location was where all the utilities were for the building. So this was the incoming gas line feed for the building, and then also the incoming power feed where the power meter is. One of the first things we do on any kind of a fire is secure the utilities for both our safety and that of the public. And because of the location of the fire, we were unable to do so. We had representatives from PG&E and the gas company on scene relatively quick. However, because of their limitations, they had to make some more significant or drastic measures to control and limit their exposure. So instead of just isolating power to that building, they isolated it to the entire block. And then because the gas line and the meter was compromised, they had to bring in a survey crew, which wasn't able to get there for about 4.5 hours, which is why there was such a significant delay. Their only option at that point was to dig up the feed line at a distant point, which was almost all the way down near the post office on the alley behind the building, and then put in a cold pinch on that line, and then work the rest of that night to repair it and put in new service lines distal to that location. Because of that, we were unable to put the fire out. As you can remember, there's been instances where I'm sure you're familiar with, like where the explosion in San Bruno, where a lot of gas compromise actually ruptured and compromised a number of homes and buildings. We have some serious concerns. And once that gas was ignited, the absolute safest thing to do is to let it burn. We were able to put the fire out in the building relatively quick. However, due to the age of the building, the compromise of what occurred, the way the building is built, it is going to most likely have to be demolished because of the amount of damage that occurred inside the building. I want to just put out a really big thank you to the quickness in response of my crew. They were on scene in less than 5 minutes, immediately attacked the fire and called for additional resources. Because of the potential for the fire to go so much larger, we called what was called a second alarm, and we basically duplicated the amount of resources that were coming initially based on the severity of the incident. If it was isolated to that building, that wouldn't have been the issue, that wouldn't have been necessary. However, the potential was significant, not only because of the exposures of the cars, but the exposures of the remaining businesses that are near there, not to say the historical building that's right behind that location. We were blessed that the fire occurred where it did, with the space that we had around it, and were able to keep everything, the fire damage to the building of origin. There is a little bit of smoke damage to the neighboring businesses, which is being dealt with now. And there is some heat damage to some of the vehicles that were parked around there. We're also very happy to say that there was no injuries to that and nobody was transported and taken to the hospital. So the aggressive actions on all involved is we're very grateful. We had over half a dozen different agencies there on scene represented, and that doesn't include the responses from the Sheriff's Department, the Healthcare District, or CHP as well. Because of the significance, you'll notice that I issued an evacuation order for that part of the community. So the entire part of that town was shut down. That's obviously done for safety, and that is the sole responsibility of someone in my position. I know that creates a headache for a lot of people, but in the long run, it's a lot better to be safe than sorry. I want to point to a couple of real quick things. I think it's too important to remember. We are in the middle of fire season. Obviously, this was downtown with not a lot of immediate vegetation. But if you'll remember our recent history in this towns of Paradise and Santa Rosa, once fires got started in the commercial areas of town, they ran for blocks and were unable to be stopped. So this wasn't exactly the same scenario. However, the potential was there, and it was only because of the quickness and effectiveness of the crews and the way they handled that. So I want to say thank you to them, to our neighboring agencies, all of our mutual aid responses, and they did a fantastic job on stopping the fire and keeping everybody else safe.
Thank you very much, Chief. I'll hand it back to you.
No, over to you, President Farmer. I'm all complete.
I was just going to ask if any of the directors had any observations or comments to make. So Director Rice, go right ahead.
Sorry to jumping on there, mister. I know it took a while for the gas company to come so that we could get the gas shut off. I'm assuming that in the debrief after that, maybe we have a plan going forward so we don't have to wait as long, or if there's a way we can, because that really hampered, because the safety of the firefighters, not just all the people that were looky-loo and just happened to be down there.
Absolutely. This is a very unique situation. Something like this does not happen on a very regular basis. Couple that with the fact that this was in the middle of the weekend and we didn't have those crews in position staffed. So it is not uncommon for us to get responded to incidents where your local homeowner or a contractor accidentally cuts into a gas line to feed to a residence. They have people on call throughout the county that are available almost immediately, maybe up to about an hour, depending on where they're coming from. The difficulty here is that this was a commercial feed line, and this was a lot larger, a lot higher pressure, and was creating a much bigger problem. And those positions are not necessarily staffed by the gas company throughout the weekend or in the middle of the night. So those are things that have been brought up through our dispatch to them, but those are industry standards that they adhere to that we don't have a lot of influence over.
I mean, if it would help the board to write a stern letter saying, hey, I mean, I just want to be supportive for our fire department is kind of where I'm coming from. How do we solve that? Because when I was listening, as I do when I hear that many sirens happening to the radio, it was clear that they were not getting the gas people there very fast at all, and they were trying to get them there.
I think there's only one other thing that I could throw in here that I would think would be relevant, is that there was two other large significant events that were happening in the county at the same exact time on the same radio channel. So there's additional discussions with our dispatch center about easing some of those concerns, because there might have been a little bit of confusion at the very beginning. But quite honestly, that is frequently the case because of just the unknown. But we are trying to work through those. We do an after-action assessment every time something like this happens, and we always learn from it. So there's definitely a benefit to taking the time to do so.
Thank you.
Vice President Stidell, you wish to make a comment?
Thank you, President Farmer. Chief, as you're here, the configuration of the other businesses that have that backspace parking area, are any of those in a similar kind of configuration for access if something were to happen? Is there something that we need to be considering in terms of safety precautions? For instance, the parking areas that exist behind those businesses?
That's a good question. We did have, if you'll understand, that business along with the French Quarter and the pharmacy are all technically on one parcel, and they're all owned by one person, even though they're separate buildings, separate locations. So the feed, primarily the gas feed to those buildings, comes all the way down that alley, and it did not have separate shutoffs. There were small bollards, those protective stanchions that were around the gas meter, but they were not adequate, in my opinion. And there was an additional cutoffs that they could have accessed to be able to shut it down, even if they were there on a quicker time frame. I know that they spent a good 12 to 14 hours after they put that pinch in, digging up the remainder of the street, putting in different shutoffs, upgrading the meters, and all that kind of stuff. We've gone back and looked at it a little bit, and we do have some additional questions as to whether or not they could subdivide that to further isolate it by business as necessary. It would be easier from a safety standpoint, and then also for them on billing. However, that's something kind of on their end as well, but we are pursuing that possibility with them. But anytime those kinds of utilities go in, they're supposed to put protective measures to try to limit access by vehicles. I can't say it enough that this was a huge unfortunate coincidence that this occurred in the location where it did. And if you go out and look at your own home, you'll find that most likely the gas meter and the electrical cutoff are about in the same location. So the potential is there, but usually you don't have a lot of parking or vehicles moving around where right. that stuff is. Right. So we might be able to enhance some of the protective measures there. We'll definitely be looking at that.
Okay. Yeah, that parking back behind those access points for those businesses is really tight under the best of circumstances, and having any unprotected access like that was experienced with Matter of Taste is concerning. Thank you for that feedback.
Yeah, Chief, I just want to make a comment. I actually happen to be downtown about a couple hundred feet away from Matter of Taste when the explosion and the fire took place. And what I found alarming, and I don't know how to relate to being a firefighter, but because of the contents of the shop, the color of the smoke and the largeness with which it presented itself kept vacillating back and forth, light gray, dark gray, more smoke, less smoke, and you never knew what was going to happen. So let me ask you, how are the firefighters reacting to this total unpredictability of this particular event?
Well, believe it or not, there is a significant amount of training that goes into the art of reading smoke. There's whole courses that are involved with that. Different kinds of fires produce different kinds of products, and the smoke varies in color. So when they first got there, it was a very black, very dark smoke laying down over the their commercial buildings because of a little bit of onshore wind. That was incredibly dangerous because that all of smoke is it's uncombusted material. So if it reaches a good high enough temperature, it theoretically can ignite and create a big fireball. That doesn't mean it's an explosion. It just means it can easily propagate that fire a distance from where it was originating. It was very important early on to get water up into the attic of that building and super cool that down as much as we could. And you'll notice that through the videos that we have been able to obtain, as soon as that happened, the color of the smoke changed from a very dark black to a gray and then kept getting lighter and lighter and lighter. That's very important because we're changing the fundamental properties of what's happening in that building. So what we see in the field, the signs we see in the building all dictate how we attack that fire, whether or not that's going to be in an offensive or in a defensive fashion. There was no immediate, although we had some initial reports of possibility of rescues, we were able through interviews to real quick in the street confirm that was not the case. And when we get there and the smoke is that dark and we know nobody's inside and the smoke has already banked down inside down to the floor, we know that we're going to be taking a defensive attack on this fire to protect our personnel, but then also aggressively be protecting the exposures by putting water curtains between the fire and the neighboring buildings. So it's a quick evaluation of a whole bunch of factors all at once, and hopefully we're reading everything right when we do that.
Well, thank you, Chief. I just want to make one more comment that there were a number of folks from law enforcement, the sheriff's department, and it seemed like police from maybe Morro Bay, I'm not sure, and encouraging people to leave. And then the highway patrol came up by in a helicopter and was calling down, you know, through whatever device they used, urging us to leave the area for our own safety. So it was obviously considered, you know, a dangerous situation. So thank you for that very complete update, Chief.
Yes, sir.
President Farmer, I do have a member that wishes to speak.
I was just going to ask you that, Haley, and it looks like Mr. Calderwood. Michael, go right ahead. You need to unmute yourself, Mike.
I have unmuted, and I am now here. Just wanted to follow up and just make a note. One thing that I found to be helpful, and I know the Chief and Dave Pearson often talk about the Fire Safe Focus Group, there's an application that you can download to your mobile device called Pulse Point. And during this incident, not only was it helpful to look at that application and listen to it, you can turn on the audio and hear all the traffic, but you also got a good sense of the context in which this incident was being fought. If you expanded out and you saw the incident that was in Templeton, there was a fire going on about the same time. And then there was that larger incident a little bit further out by the Shandon area, I believe. And you just looked at the application and it looked like the CNBC Chiron with all of these codes and colors and units. Just scrolling across, it was an amazing display of logistics. But not only that, it gives you a real sense of what conditions truly are in this incident, and what impacts responses, and what impacts what may or may not be coming your way to help. Listening along on the audio portion of that, you could hear, you know, Captain Trelano sort of doing a play-by-play as what was going on, what she was looking at, what the concerns were, how it was impacting the way the fire was being fought. So overall, great education, a great way for the community to stay away from downtown, but also get some sense of what the activities are that are driving all the responses that were going on. Everything from the air support, both locally and all the way out across the county, to the sort of the blow-by-blow. So I would suggest that people find that application. I think it's available through the Fire Safe Focus Group. There's a link to it, and get it. And that'll sort of give you a good sense of what's going on in real time. But also you can look and see how our emergency services and our emergency response teams across the county operate on a day-to-day basis. So really good information there. And finally, the response of the Cambria Fire Department so quickly and so professionally attacking that fire is just an indication of the training that they do on a constant basis, the skills and talents that they have, and the education that they have, and the leadership that they have to make sure that we've got a world-class firefighting group. So thanks, Chief, and to your team for all that.
Thank you very much, Michael. And I want to thank you, by the way, not just for your comments, but for the very pleasant photo that you have there, taken from Fiscalini Ranch, looking at the hillsides there in Seacliff Estate. So thank you so much for that. Very pleasant reminder of the beauty that we live in here. So let's move on to someone else.
President Farmer, I had my hand up. I'm sorry. I just wanted to take this moment to pat myself on the back for being on the board that hired Captain and then now Chief Hollingsworth. I think that's one of the better decisions that I've made since I've been on the board, and I'm very glad to see you're in charge. And this incident is just one additional example of the great team that you have, and part of that is is kudos to your leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice. I'm sure all the rest of us directors feel the same way. So thank you so much. So let's now move on, if we don't mind, move on to public comment. Haley, do you have any requests for public comment? Let me see here. Looking at attendees, I see Karen Dean wishes to speak. Do you have any requests at all, Haley?
I do not have any requests, but I do see some hands being raised. So I will get Karen Dean in and then Paul.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I know that this is a topic that's been discussed in the past, but I think it would be helpful to have it reviewed again and to get some guidance on it. With our standing committees forming more and more ad hoc or subcommittees, particularly now when we have one that involves two members of R&I, two from finance, and two ex officio directors, not consisting of a quorum from any of these groups, I think the public and the committee members need some reclarification of the Brown Act regarding these committees, especially as it relates to noticing and public participation in these committee meetings. There seems to be some confusion among both the public and the committee members on this issue. On another topic, I would also like to echo the commendations given to our finance department personnel. I think they've been doing an absolutely fantastic job and such an improvement over the, you know, during the past few years. And I would also like to echo all the comments given to our fire personnel, our emergency personnel, and also the sympathies to Adam Hill. And also, I'd like to say, I think this rain is absolutely wonderful. And my rain gauge up here on Lodge Hill shows just about 0.2 inches. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dean, for your comments and your weather report. Haley? Well, I think it looks like Paul Nugent there, doesn't it?
Yes. Paul, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Good afternoon, board. I'll try to make this brief. I'm not sure that I'll be able to be here for the later agenda item that I'm touching on. But in general, I just want to bring up some things to put into context as you guys have a discussion today. We had a board meeting recently where our general manager proposed a grant application for some charging stations. To my understanding, that the outcome of that would not have been lawful, as in we were trying to make a profitable business on our property. I think that Don Howell did a great job of, or Director Howell did a great job of trying to target that desire to an actual solution, which I appreciate. And I think it exemplifies why the board and the staff need to be partnering on grants. So I just bring that up as a general point. I'm kind of surprised that in a world where we just started a meeting with an apology from a leader from an organization that's having trouble determining whether or not he should be presenting things online in a certain form or not. And we're talking about applying for grants, which are a significant burden on our community if we're talking about following through with those. So that's my comments for today.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Or I should say, Mr. Nugent. I don't see any other people in attendance raising their hand. So I will assume, and nothing at your end, right, Haley?
No, I don't have any other requests to speak.
All right, thank you. So let's move on to consent agenda. And Haley, why don't I have you read this? For some reason I'm spacing out. Should I have you read consent agenda, or should I just, my apologies, folks, or should I just go to the board and ask for a vote on this? So why don't you go ahead and bail me out, Haley?
Well, do you want to have the general manager introduce the consent agenda?
Oh,
and then ask
that?
For public comment?
There we go. Sorry, folks. Good, Mr. Weigold. Thank you.
Okay, President Farmer. The consent agenda, there's only one item. For this meeting, and it's agenda item 5A, which is consideration of adoption of resolution 40-2020, which also authorizes the general manager to execute an amendment to the health reimbursement arrangement employee benefit plan, implementing new provisions of the CARES Act. The staff is recommending that the board adopt this resolution, authorizing the general manager to execute the plan amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Weigold. Any Director Pearson, you wish to make a comment?
No, I just would like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
All right, Haley, so we have a motion made and a second. Could you go ahead and call the roll, please?
Sure. Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you very much. So move on to agenda item number 6A, and Chief Hollingsworth. William?
Yes, sir. The item before you is the culmination of the work so far to date for the 2020 Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Program. Back in April, the board authorized a declaration of a nuisance in regards to the weeds and hazards in the community. And so since that time, property owners have been clearing their parcels in accordance with that mandate secondary to the health and safety order. We set a deadline for them to comply with that order, which is July 15th. After that, my staff goes out and does inspections and evaluates the community, re-notifies a number of people that have turned in compliance-related issues, and if there's anything that needs to be fixed, that's addressed. But even through all that process, there's always a list of property owners that choose not to comply. And you'll have to remember that they have the legal right to make that decision. So when that happens, we have to create a list or a contract list, so to speak. And you are then given that list. People have to be given the right to appeal that process, which is why this is a public hearing. If authorized by you today, I will take that list and turn it over to the contractor, which has been hired by the CCSD. And cutting on those uncleared parcels will begin as soon as tomorrow. He has a little bit over a month to finalize that work. Over to you for any questions.
Looks like Director Rice has a query. Go right ahead, Director Rice.
Just a quick question, Chief. On the exhibit to the resolution, the list, the contract abatement list, there's a column that says use and it's A or B.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell me?
Yes. So the majority of parcels in this community, if it is a double lot parcel, are about 50 by 70 in size. If there are relatively small number, but there are a few which are fairly large, and an A requires an all cut, a B requires a break cut, but they have to comply with the defensible space guidelines of that CAL FIRE issues and that we adopt. So if you happen to own an unimproved parcel next to an improved area, but it's maybe 2 acres in size, we would force you to cut 100 feet off of that line to make sure we're giving that the improved areas a safety barrier, if you will, but we're not requiring them to cut the entire 2 acre parcel.
Thank you very much, Chief. Anyone else on the board have any questions of Chief Hollingsworth? Well, seeing none, no further discussion. So, does anyone wish to make a motion to approve this item?
I move approval of Resolution 38-2020.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. I see that Vice President Seidel had her hand up. Has her hand up now.
No.
Did you wish to make a comment?
I actually had raised it to make the motion, and Director Rice beat me to it.
Sorry.
Not a problem. As long as I'm on the line, I'll second it.
All right. Well, the two ladies have the floor at this moment. So, Haley, why don't you ahead and do a roll call, please?
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
President Park?
Aye. So we're moving on to regular business. item 7A and Mr. Weigel.
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 7A is a discussion and consideration of adoption of resolution 39-2020, declaring a continued local emergency in the Cambria Community Services District due to the coronavirus pandemic. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors discuss and consider adoption of this resolution and declaring a continued local emergency in the CCSD due to the coronavirus pandemic. And I might add that we've added some additional information on the fiscal impact right now from the virus, as you had asked for in a previous board meeting. And have the finance manager standing by to orally deliver the May to June billing cycle information that we just, as we just closed the cycle down here this week.
So for the May billing cycle, we additionally have 188 customers that will be receiving a reminder notice that their payment is past due. There will not be late charges on that bill. And the value of that is $108,000 approximately. And then we also have had 8 requests thus far for payment plans. And that is about $2,200 as it stands currently right now.
Thank you, Pam.
Well, Ms. Duffield, for those that maybe are attending the meeting but don't have the agenda in front of them and aren't familiar with the numbers that we've had up until now, if you could just briefly comment on what those were, comparing them to what you have at this point, which just like the coronavirus cases in the county, this is a tremendous leap up in the number of late requests for payment.
It's actually about the same. We usually have somewhere between 180 late customers and maybe 210. So our range of late customers is pretty normal for what we see on a normal billing cycle. We are getting more requests we have been getting more requests over these last few months for payment plans. But, you know, again, we're working with people in these unusual situations to help them get through, you know, this unusual time that we are having.
I must have misunderstood. My apologies for sticking with the side for just a minute more, but you were talking about, you know, late requests here. And so in January and February, it was 11. And then March and April, it was 46. And then you just said, I believe you said 188 for May and June. Did I misunderstand you?
No, that's correct. So the numbers that you're seeing on this chart are what is late as of today. So this is just to update the board and the public on the customers that are still have an outstanding late balance from the previous billing cycles, from the November, December billing, from the January, February billing, the March, April billing. And keep in mind, our payment due date for the May-June billing was just this past Monday. So, you know, that's a very recent turn of events. So I'm looking at my computer right now. And if we go back to the November-December late notices at the time of around the 10th of December or the 10th of January when those were due, I guess it would have been the 10th of January. There were 206 customers that were late. If we move forward to January, February, there were 198 customers. Moving forward to April or March and April, there was 185. And then for the May, June cycle, we have 188. So it's pretty consistent, you know, for the last four billing cycles. It's fairly consistent. So just a little bit of statistics there for you.
President. All right. Well, thank you. Well, it looks like we have a number of comments or questions from the board. So I believe Director Rice, why don't you go ahead first, please?
So looking at the resolution, it just basically only gives us the declaration. There isn't a clause in here about the GM's authority. I'm having trouble seeing why we're taking time with this if we're not getting an actual update from our staff about how it's affecting the district, and if immediate approvals aren't needed for some reason that he would need to make some decision that normally he would have to come to the board, but because of an emergency, he doesn't have to come to the board. But that's not in this resolution, if I'm not mistaken. Is there some way we can avoid having, can we pass another resolution maybe at the September meeting to change it to like once a month, once a quarter, related to, it seems like a space keeper when we don't really need one every single meeting, I guess is where I'm coming from.
I can weigh in on that if you'd like. Yeah, that clause is in resolution 09-2020. So mm-hmm. We can amend that resolution possibly next week, but more likely the first meeting in September.
That would be fine.
And would the board want that once a month? One regular meeting a month? No? How often do you want to make the continuing emergency declaration?
Make it every other month.
Every other month? Is that general consensus of the board?
Well, one person said it. I don't know if it's a general consensus, but we can go around the block and find out. Director Rice, how do you feel about that? And then Vice President Steidel has a comment.
So my concern about every other month would be forgetting to stick it onto the agenda or such. If you do it every month and you say the first meeting of the month, whatever, it makes it easier to remember. But I really think it just needs to be less frequent. And as long as there's a sunset somewhere, so it doesn't just in perpetuity. There's a word there somewhere.
Vice President Steidel, did you wish to make a comment as well?
Well, as far as this is in context of this, yeah, I think probably we're driven so much by whatever is established by the county. I mean, if we actually defaulted to, you know, maintaining the conditions that are outlined to us by the county, that we're fulfilling our obligation unless there's something that's But I can live with 1 month, 2 months. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, I think we're drifting a little bit away from what this is actually about. But Director Howell, you usually have some words of enlightenment, so go right ahead.
Thank you. It seems like there's actually two aspects to this emergency situation, and one has to do with not turning off people if they're late or for non-payment and for forgiving late fees. And we are doing that because of this particular emergency that we're in. The other aspect of an emergency, though, has to do with whether the general manager should have special powers that he would not normally have. I see those as two different things. And I'd like to have this brought up the next time and we discuss whether, because I can see I'm not convinced at this moment in time that while we do need to continue to waive the late fees and we not be turning people off, and that's more in concert with the guidance from the state and the county, but I'm not convinced that this particular emergency situation necessitates special powers that the normal approval processes that are in our procedures that could be bypassed during an emergency. I'm not convinced that this is that type of emergency. So I do think that we need a more specific declaration in this regard, and I'd like to see that come up at the earliest possible time, actually. But and certainly once a month, in any case.
If I might, President Farmer, just to follow up, because the third reason to have a declaration is so we can qualify for money from the state or feds. That's the other really critical reason why we need to have the declaration. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice. Ms. Duffield, you wish to make a comment?
So I just want to respond to Director Howell. So the original declaration is in a separate resolution, separate from the late fee waiver and the shutoff. So the late fee waiver and shutoffs was actually in resolution 11-20, where the emergency was declared in 9-20. So they are related. We're relating them because it has to do with one another, and we just thought putting that late information made sense in this update of the staff report, but it is on a whole separate resolution.
All right, thank you, Ms. Duffield. Vice President Steidel, you wish to make a comment?
Sorry, I didn't lower my hand previously.
No problem. So obviously we're going to bring this back as a future item in September, maybe with some different wording included in this particular resolution. But for right now, do I hear a motion to approve what we have in front of us at this point?
So moved.
President Farmer, I think there's one outstanding public comment.
My apologies. You are correct. Ms. Dickerson, go right ahead.
Thank you, President Farmer. I also had my hand raised on the general manager's item, but I was ignored as it keeps happening every meeting. So please pay attention.
Okay, Tina, that's on me. My apologies. Okay.
Yeah, so, okay. Just lost my... Oh, yeah. So on this item... President Farmer, and it might be something that legal counsel can address, but I would assume that some of you, if not all of you, are keeping up with the news where a bill was, John Garamendi in the House of Representatives brought a bill to the House for legislation to pass regarding special districts receiving funding, which they've not been allowed before. Now that has moved to the Senate, now has their own bill, and that is awaiting approval. So, you know, there may be some monies coming to you, and I'd like to know if you are actually aware of this. I brought it up a couple of months ago. Maybe legal counsel can apprise you of what the latest is on that. Please. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Tim, Mr. Carmel?
Yeah, the bill is still in the legislature, but hopefully it'll be passed soon and we'll get some relief. I think we're tracking our COVID costs, COVID-related costs.
All right, thank you. Anyone else on the board? I don't see any further comments from those in attendance. So any further comments from the board? Seeing none, does anybody wish to make a motion to approve this item?
I move approval of Resolution 39-2020.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Haley, if you would do a roll call vote, please.
Director Rice.
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you, Haley. Let's move on to item 7B, and Mr. Weigold, General Manager Weigold.
Yes, President Farmer, agenda item 7B is discussion and consideration to adopt draft policy 4350. The policy committee recommends the board of directors review the draft policy 4350 and consider adoption of the same, which is reimbursement of standing committee member expenses.
So thank you very much. So Director Howell, do you have any further comments to make to give us a little bit more information to both the board and those in attendance?
There's really not a great deal to say about this. We did turn it over and roundabout, and I actually made a somewhat more liberal proposal, which the policy committee turned down. So I present what they gave you, which is basically that there should be no reimbursement, and that they were pretty certain about that. So that's the opinion of all five of them.
All right, thank you, Director Rice.
So we had a conversation prior, Director Howell, regarding standing versus advisory committees, and so I just wanted to raise that nominal issue. Is that the right word? My vocabulary is awful today. But I just wanted to remind the rest of the board also that remains an unresolved question, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But I appreciate the work of the committee. Thank you.
If I may, Mr. President, may I respond? Harry?
Go right ahead.
Thanks. The way I understood that, that issue about advisory versus standing, I had an incorrect understanding in my own mind. Elizabeth Bettenhausen sent me an Attorney General's opinion about this. And where I understand, I'm still not 100% clear, but one thing I am fairly certain about is that those two criteria are, you can have a standing committee that is advisory, and you can have an advisory committee that is not a standing committee. So they're not the same kind of criterion. And in this particular case that we're proposing here is only for the standing committees that the board has in its own bylaws created. And that is what we're speaking of. And that would apply to, we did not refer to the PROS Commission, so I'm not sure the board may wish to modify the language to include the PROS Commission. Right now, it just says standing committees, I believe. And the PROS Commission is a little different. So whether that should be included or not, I have no opinion. But I do point that out. Did that help to kind of clarify advisoriness or not? That's really not the issue. It's the standingness that's the issue here.
Is that a satisfactory answer for you, Director Rice? Vice President Steidel, you've raised your hand.
I would suggest that what we're looking at is adapting this draft policy, and I do think that there's still a conversation maybe that needs to happen to put a bow on it, as it were, in terms of the terminology that's used, just so that we can resolve it once and for all. Because it was discussed at some length, but I don't know that there was any formal action that the board took to any specific application. So I guess to that case, I would put forward are you considering calling a motion yet?
Are you wishing to make a motion?
Yes, please. I move to adopt draft policy 4350, reimbursement of standing committee members' expenses.
Second.
Director Wright? Okay, thank you. So once again, the ladies are taking the initiative. Haley, would you do a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Before I call the roll call vote.
Director Howell, you're muted, Dawn.
I noticed that Ms. Dickinson also wishes to make a comment as well. I don't want to neglect her. Tina, go right ahead. unmute yourself, please?
I am. Thank you. I am so confused about how much time we've spent. I thought we had cleared up a couple of items. What I'm not clear on, I mean, if it's a standing committee, it's for a long term, for a long term items, right? If it's an ad hoc committee, which I believe only the board itself can have an ad hoc committee, that the standing committees cannot be called ad hoc committees, but they should be subcommittees or advisory committees. I think that we've been not addressing this properly. And so maybe, again, legal counsel can weigh in. But, you know, how many more meetings do we have to have about these standing committees versus advisory committees? I thought there was a vote taken on at least the participation of directors or non-participation. That's out of the way, right? If I understand that clearly. But the standing committees, as I understand it, are for long-term items that the board has directed them and be tasked to do to bring their results back. Am I right in that? And while we're on the subject, I would ask too, why the public would not be noticed on a joint meeting of standing committees, such as the R&I and Finance Committee had just a short while back, where the public is not allowed to participate in that. I've never heard of that before, and I think legal counsel, I'd like to know about that as well. When you joint standing committees to have a joint committee meeting that we, the public, are not allowed to attend, nor was it noticed. I only thought that closed sessions were of the board itself, not a standing committee. So can we please get that straightened out as well? Thank you.
Excuse me, President Parker. Can we move on to the agenda item? We've had a first and a second. May we have a vote call, please?
We're way off topic, President Farmer.
Yeah, this isn't the topic that this agenda item represents.
Thank you. Haley, would you please go ahead and do a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howe? Director Pearson?
Yeah.
President Farmer?
Yes, thank you. Let's move on to item 7C. And General Manager Largo, would you go ahead and introduce this item?
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 7C is discussion and consideration to approve revisions to the policy on applying for grants. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss, consider, and approve the recommended changes to the attached policy on applying for grants. The background here, this is something that I had worked with a couple of the board members, particularly as it relates to not only, but one of the biggest issues coming forward before us is the grant process for the SST program. But it's really, after taking a look at the entire grant process, it's really stretched out. As I mentioned in the staff report, there can be as many as three separate times that a grant has to come before the board. And at the end of the day, the most important one is an adjustment to the budget, which the board has cognizance over. So my presentation is really based on trying to collapse that process a bit, particularly as we could have a whole bunch of grants coming before us as we get ready for this SST program funding, but also to, again, minimize a little bit of the process within the staff, but yet still be consistent with board oversight. So that was the intent here. So over to you, President Farmer, for board discussion. And I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you. No problem. I could go to board discussion at this moment, but we do have a request for public comment. But let me just briefly ask, Would anyone on the board wish to make a comment at this time before I go to, we actually have two people in the public wishing to make comments. Would any members of the board wish to say something right now, or would you like me to just go directly to public comments?
I'd like to hear public comment.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Dean? Yes, Haley, pardon me.
I do have a comment to read as well, so I'll bring in Karen and Elizabeth, and then I'll speak last.
All right, thank you. All right. Thank you. Pardon me for interrupting.
Hi, I'm a bit confused regarding this agenda item involving the general manager's request to have the authority to seek grants without prior board review and approval. Didn't we just last month hear at a board meeting the general manager get admonished for applying for a grant for electric vehicle charging stations, which may have required matching funds we may not have, and that was out of the purview of the district without bringing it before the board prior to doing so? The proposed policy before you today, if I read it correctly, would give the general manager sole authority to seek grants with only the review of the department heads, which, by the way, are his employees, and the review of our finance manager if the grant requires matching funds or budgetary adjustments, and then only bringing it before the board if those budgetary adjustments need board approval. Where would be the oversight of the board on this when it comes to the finances of the district? The general manager works under the direction and the supervision of the board. I'm fully in support of the SSP program, as you know, and I know how important getting the grants for the funding for these things is. But I still think that we can call a special meeting if timing is an issue for getting these grants. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dean. We have two other people to speak. Haley, would you like to introduce one of them?
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, President Farmer. I sent the entire board and the general manager a memo, and I'd like simply to read that out loud. Here's my assumption. In items of regular business and hearing and appeals, the agendas of the CCSD board of directors, the word staff refers to the person whose name follows the from at the beginning of the item. Is my assumption correct? Thus, in 7C, the item before you, John F. Weigold, the fourth general manager, is recommending the changes. The changes are summarized this way, and he referred to this again in his oral comment now. Quote, staff recommends condensing this process together to one board touch point for budget adjustment approval and to approve any required resolutions following a grant offer, end of quotation. This, and these are my words now, this condensing would shift significant authority in budget creating and oversight from the board of directors to the general manager. All analysis of the merits of the project for which the grant is proposed will be done by, quote, staff, end quote. The staff will submit the application. The only time the project comes before the board of directors is when the board is asked to amend the current fiscal year budget to provide matching funds. Amending the budget is the only task left to the board. I think this proposed change is extremely unwise. Too often since I moved to Cambria in 2002, the general manager has assumed authority inappropriate to the office. This is another instance of the struggle between the CCSD board of directors and the general manager for more power. The CCSD Board of Directors must oppose this attempt by the general manager to stand on top of the pyramid, not two layers down below the public and the Board of Directors, as the law requires. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. We have two other speakers, Haley, and then your written comment.
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Christine Heinrichs.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrich. Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you for bringing this item forward for discussion. While it may be inconvenient to bring grant applications to the board three times for review, first prior to the grant application, then to accept the grant, and third to approve a budget adjustment, this is public money. If it is going to be committed, the public needs to know how much and what for before a grant gets to the point of being awarded. The board has had good discussions of grant funding in the past. Director Rice has pointed out that turning down a grant that has been awarded because of lack of matching funds is not well received by granting agencies. After they have taken the time and effort to evaluate a grant application and offer an award, the expectation is that the grant will be accepted. A grant that is turned down by the applicant at that point can affect how future grant applications are treated. They are less likely to be funded if the granting agency thinks that their award will not be accepted. By the time the general manager comes to the board with a fait accompli grant ready to be accepted and funded, the pressure is on the district to accept, even though the board and the public have not been informed about the application before that. It may sound like duplicated effort, but public funding requires allowing the public to be informed of what is proposed as well as what money has been spent. If the board feels this is a policy that should be reconsidered, please refer it to the policy committee, which exists to address exactly this kind of question. The general manager should not be burdened with authority beyond appropriate commitment of public money. Giving him this authority conceals significant decisions about how public money will be spent. That authority is rightly the board's and should remain there. This policy looks fine to me as it is. Please do not adopt these changes.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrich. We have another speaker, Haley.
Yes, the next member of the public that wishes to speak is Tina Dickerson.
Thank you, Haley. Thank you, President Farmer. My comments are short, but I strongly urge the board to exercise its due diligence by exercising its authority by having oversight of the general manager when adjustments to the budget are being recommended or being made. I do not believe that department heads supersede the board, and I think the board needs to show the community that you have a job to do, and that is to exercise your authority over the general manager, especially when it comes to changes being made in the budget. That is up to you, and please do not vote for this item. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. Haley, I believe you said you had a written comment to read.
Yes, I do. And the public member is Scott Anderson. And his comment is, I see this proposed modification in the following light. Does the board want to cede more authority to CCSD staff and in particular to the general manager? Recent Cambria CCSD history does not support the idea of a more empowered general manager becoming increasingly independent from board oversight. Cambria ratepayers are paying and will continue to pay into the future for the operational indiscretions of the previous manager. Now is not the appropriate time for the board to again cede their authority to a new and unproven general manager. I urge the board to retain their direct oversight over grant policy. Sincerely, Scott Anderson.
Thank you very much, Haley. Let's bring this back to the board for more discussion. Anyone wish to make any comments that either agree or disagree with what's been said by the public?
Well,
Director Pearson, go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, as I read it, this does limit his ability to apply for grants to those that have matching under $25,000, which is what his authority is at. And so there is a restriction on how much he's allowed to apply for and kind of obligate us to as an application, let's say. Second, my experience with grants is that the time from application deadline to granting of applications and letting the organization know that they've been awarded a grant is usually in excess of 3 months, and at times longer than that. This change also mentioned that the general manager will promptly tell the board of all applications made, whether they're matching things or not, so that we're aware of all of these. And we can, at that time, discourage him from doing so or encourage those in going forward. So, I'm not sure that I'm going to disagree with what's stated here. I think we're fine moving forward. I think he's got to come back to us for approval of any monies that would be outside the budget. And he's got to come to us if he wants to obligate us to more than $25,000 on application. So I'm pretty good on the fact that we're not going to have a general manager running rampant and spending our money without our knowledge of it. Just my feelings. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Director Rice.
I don't support making these changes for a couple of reasons that have virtually nothing to do with the level of trust I have in the current general manager, and almost everything to do with both protecting him from doing things that might be off the path that that the board wants to see, and priority wise, like, for example, the electric car charging stations, which is not even on our list of priorities. Now, with the SST, I'd be okay with, you know, passing a resolution that gives special agreement to that, because I think the board is supportive of that program and understands that grants are part of that program. But every grant has a lot of work that has to go into it. I think you just need to talk to Emily Torlano, who has been awarded a lot of grants through the fire department for work here. That it's a time consuming process, and our staff is already working so hard. There's also contract provisions of every grant that we have to meet certain standards from the granting agency, and if the board doesn't know ahead of time what those obligations might be, and I'm just going to say six heads are better than one. I mean, if we're going to have the department heads looking at it, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't also have board members who have differing backgrounds, different experience, different sense of what the priorities for the district are. I think having discussion, especially if it's something even that has matching funds of $25,000, I think it's important for the board to be, we don't tell him how to do the job, we tell him what he needs to do. And if it's not a priority, then we shouldn't be having staff spending time putting together the application for a grant. So I just would urge us to for now leave the policy as is.
Thank you, Director Rice. Anyone else on the board wish to make a comment? Director Howell.
Thank you, President Farmer. Yes, I have to say that while I do appreciate the necessity for so often for moving quickly, and particularly with our PG&E project, so I do accept that perhaps our procedures could be faster. However, this particular solution I really cannot support. There are a couple of, for one thing, if you'll note paragraph 2 of the first page, let me just read the first sentence to you. It shall be the policy of the CCSD to identify and apply for grants that provide additional financial resources to the district. Now, this is the important part coming up, to assist in carrying out its projects and programs. That's very important. To assist its carrying out its progress, its project and programs. And then if you'll go to the second page, first bullet, I'll read that one to you. And this is the department heads now in which we're speaking, that the department heads will review the possible grant proposal and examine it for consistency with the overall goals of the district. Now, in order for that to happen, first of all, the district has to have clearly defined goals. And I have to tell you, we have some goals, but I don't really think they're a little bit amorphous and not terribly well-defined and rather general. This is not a criticism. I'm just saying that, and it's not too surprising. In fact, this board actually, it's been a while since this board has actually discussed the directions that it would like to proceed and the goals that it has. And it's by no means certain that all five of us are in agreement. And furthermore, as we might agree today to a set of goals and projects, but you know, how many months from now, 8 months from now, there will be a new board and they may have different goals and different projects. So I think in view of this issue, I really think that it's very important that these issues do be brought back to the board. So I think that I have no problem with the present, with the old policy. It may need to, as I say, I do accept that there may be ways that it can be streamlined, but I really would not want to throw out the three occasions where there is interaction with the board. And in the first one, which is to where, according to the old policy, the general manager, if he's interested in a grant, consults with a subcommittee of the board. That subcommittee is two people. There is no notice requirements. It could happen over the phone. It could happen. There is not a Brown Act issue. So there is no reason whatsoever in my mind why the general manager couldn't make a phone call or two or meet with the subcommittee, which we would probably have to appoint, which would be the grant subcommittee. So I don't see timing as an issue on that one at all. And as for the other two, again, if planning is done appropriately and meetings are conducted in a businesslike manner, it should not normally take an excessive amount of time for it to go through this approval procedure. As the new proposal is, as the new grant procedure that's being proposed only allows board input as an after the fact, where the grant has actually already been awarded and we just have to accept it and adjust the budget. That's the first time that we would see it. That's not acceptable. The other thing which I think is important and which we're forgetting, although I think one of our public commenters made a very clear point to this, which is that point when the budget adjustment is being made and the grant is being accepted would be the only time that the public would ever even hear about it. And the only time the public could make any comments on it. So I think, again, that suggests to me that there's two times before the board, once before the board, what does the policy say? The old policy? To the board of directors for approval prior to submitting the application. That would be the first opportunity that the public would have to weigh in on that and for the board to make a decision as to whether it felt it was appropriate to move forward. And I really don't see how sacrificing that opportunity for interaction both between the board and the public could possibly serve the interests of this district. So I really do urge that we do keep the old policy. I like the idea of the promptly reporting. That would be a nice addition. But I would suggest that if the general manager and staff really want to streamline the process, I would recommend that they consult with, I offer the policy committee as a possibility to consult and to come up with some kind of a procedure that would be acceptable to the community as well as to the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Howell, Director Howell, pardon me. You know, I do see that we have a member of the public that wishes to speak, but we also have two directors that wish to make a comment. So let me go to the directors, and then Mr. Nugent will hear from you if you don't mind. So, Vice President Steidel.
Thank you, President Frommer. What I'm hearing is that, at least from some, certainly in the conversation that Director Howell just offered, that the idea of having some streamlining injected into the process to try to reach a reasonable point for being able to move the whole grant process forward in a faster fashion is something to be considered, that just perhaps it's not what's being offered here directly. I may be wrong, but I'm under the impression, at least, that some of what was engendering the idea of speeding up the process in this was an anticipation of how we would need to react as an organization to potential grant applications and uses. And not all grants are the same. I mean, there's always the possibility there could be a grant that did not have matching funds associated with it that would fit into the SST program that we could move quickly with. Sometimes in the situations where there are grant monies available, time can rob you of the opportunity of being in line to be able to get some of the monies that are being offered. I guess I would like to get some feedback from Director Pearson a little bit in terms of how he views this within the framework of what the R&I committee is doing, because I think a lot of what has brought this conversation about is the idea that we're going to need to be smart and fast about being able to get the resource money to execute what we'd like to do and have said that we had wanted to do with even the 218 to be able to put our operations in water and wastewater in a healthier position. So I think that we probably need to be doing something with this grant policy. If for some reason this particular statement of it somehow seems to take away from the public accessibility to information, or somehow that people, because of past experience, are wary of the stuff that this would represent, then we just need to address those items and have an honest conversation about what are smart ways to make it happen. Because I do think that we do need to make some revisions, and we need to be aware of the streamlining of the process. And if we need to just make a statement of possible exceptions or the idea of, you know, a different review process for items that relate to matching funds. Possibly we need to have that conversation to go forward with it. But I also recognize that we're on a timeline of being able to get something in place for needing to go after these with grant applications for the work that we have coming up in front of us in a very short period of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Director Pearson, you wish to add something?
Thank you, President Frommer. I'm a little bit concerned about the timeline that currently exists in the policy. Talking about must first be submitted to the appropriate subcommittee board for review, and then the board of directors for approval prior to submitting the application, with proper noticing, etc., of those meetings, even if they were special meetings. We're talking about a couple of weeks, maybe a month. So I'm I'm a little bit concerned about that. So I'd like this to be maybe tabled, and maybe there needs to be an ad hoc, or maybe we give it to the policy committee, standing committee, to try to come up with a better solution here as to how we get grants done. I'm thinking maybe that during the budget review, there's a listing of grant opportunities, and then on every quarterly budget review, those are revised, and during that budget process, we're approving the general manager to do certain grant opportunities through that. So that number one, we see the process a little bit, and number two, we are able to apply for grants that come up all of a sudden, and at the same time, give the public a chance to weigh in on going after grants in certain areas and stuff. So those are my primary concerns, and maybe the policy committee to come up with a better way of getting this done, and getting them done in a quick manner. And in the meantime, for the SST, maybe a resolution could come forward saying that just for the SST, we give the general manager X authority to go after grants and apply for them, so that we can speed that along a little bit. Or at least that he only has to bring it to the board, and if he needs a special meeting, that he would call a special meeting. I'm rambling, I'm sorry. I yield the rest of my time, I guess.
President Farmer, I can't hear you. President Farmer, I can't hear you.
I'm all right now. Thank you.
There you go.
I have to use my phone. My microphone no longer works on my computer. So trying to speed things up, I think Director Pearson made that comment during his presentation. So I see we have three directors that wish to make a comment. And I know earlier Mr. Nugent made the remark that he wouldn't be able to attend the entire meeting, and he's the one that wishes to make a public comment. So let me just quickly ask him. Paul, can you stick around for just a little bit longer and let the members of the board comment? Would that be okay with you?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a real quick correction to some key facts that might be worthwhile discussing in this. But yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. So let's, Director Howell, since we're talking about policy here, why don't I hand it off to you?
Okay, I fear I may have jumped the line here. Well, I think one possibility that'll get us over the hump, the immediate hump, is if we already have the chairman of the Finance Committee and the chairman of the Resources and Infrastructure Committee here, those two individuals could easily serve as an ad hoc subcommittee of the board to commence dealing with, and could in discussion with Mr. Weigold, come up with a list of possible grants or something. In other words, we already have that structure in place regarding, and in fact, even regarding any grant, it would seem to me logical those would be the two places that we would want to go. But anyway, just to get over it, so I would suggest that, yes, I'd be glad to have the policy. We'd actually move some folks off of what they're doing now and get right on this to try to come up with something that might work. But in the meantime, and this is the question for council, can the board president just on his own appoint an ad hoc subcommittee, or do we have to do it by a vote?
Historically, it's been done by a vote.
But in terms of legally and in terms of the bylaws?
I don't think it's addressed in the bylaws, but I think that historically it's been the subject of board approval.
Okay. The reason I was trying to avoid having to put this for another meeting to vote to have a, and I do know that in some of the subcommittee bylaws, the chairman did have the option of appointing an ad hoc. So I would suggest if it's not illegal that we just do it. But if it is, if it's going to be a Brown Act violation, then no, we won't do it. But so 2 points, I think Director Pearson and Director Rice could, I mean, Director Steidel could easily and most logically serve as the grant discussing subcommittee of the board should such a subcommittee ever exist. And the other thing is on with board instruction, we'd be more than happy to take over and really work on it to bring it back at whatever time frame this board would desire from the policy committee.
Thank you, Director Hall. Director Rice.
Can't hear you.
Thank you. I'm against changing this policy for a couple of important reasons. This discussion and the time that we're taking on this would have been avoided had we paid attention to the purpose each of us has in this whole setup. Directors do policy. General manager does operations. General manager should not be bringing us policy. General manager should be talking to either the head of the policy committee or the president and vice president as part of agenda prep, but policy changes should not be driven by the general manager. Just as a general rule, if we're going to be a policy board and let him do the operations. So that's one thing. The other thing is I don't have almost everybody that we're in competition with for any grant has the same timeline constraints as we do because they are also public agencies. Calling an extra meeting to approve something or to go over something, if that's the only thing on the agenda, it seems like that's not too much of a burden. I absolutely would support a specific SST exception, and here's why. There's a list that's prioritized, that the board's seen, the board's approved. If we have projects that are sitting there essentially shovel ready that the board has all along funded to this point, I have no problem with that. I think that everybody in town understands this board is supportive of that program and understands that part of the benefit of that program is being able to get these grants. So again, I don't have a problem if we need to do something that's very narrow to the SST, but I don't support doing this now. And I would say that I would support the board assigning this to the policy committee. Hopefully, if there's other discussion, we can include that. But to maybe put in that exception for the SST, because I do not want to prevent us from getting money. But let's remember, we're not in competition with people that don't have similar constraints as we do of having a board that has to approve things. So, I mean, that's kind of a red herring argument, in my opinion. That's all.
Thank you, Director Rice. Vice President Steidel.
I will say that I'm sure that there are other organizations that may be working under the same constraints. They also may be organizations that are deep enough in terms of their staff infrastructure to be able to turn things quickly and generate things quickly. And that can make a big difference too. I think we have the conditions of a staff that is fully committed in the work content that they have, and that being able to play on a level playing field may not just be the application of it may not just be the consideration of the same people going after the same money. The idea of having something that is SST specific, I think, is something that's a serious consideration. And if it's a matter of tabling this at this point to bring something back that defines that, or if you want to have it handled as a separate resolution or rider to the existing policy with some kind of sunset provision, or, you know, having just the parameters of SST defined shovel-ready items, whatever it's going to take to be able to put us in the best possible position to turn things quickly, to be able to support something that we've worked so hard and invested so much time, energy, resources, and monies into making happen, I think is important.
All right. Thank you, Vice President Steidel. So we have two members of the public that wish to speak. Haley, would you bring them on, please?
Did we already take public comment on this item, sir? I mean, it's your prerogative. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't misremembering.
No, you are correct, but
it's your prerogative.
If you don't mind, I think,
no, it's your prerogative.
I understand that. Thank you. I'm going to allow these folks to speak. Thank you very much.
Okay, the first member of the public that wishes to speak is Paul Nugent.
Yeah, thank you guys. And I appreciate you guys letting me talk a little bit later than I was supposed to. I wanted to make a correction because I was able to listen, and I'm pretty sure that the general manager is given a 25K budget for emergency usage. It's not a discretionary 25K. And if I'm mistaken on that, that's my bad. But I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's you know, functional to this discussion. I completely agree with what Amanda Rice just said. I'm not trying to interject myself in your guys' discussion, but I appreciate that entire line of thought. I do think that it's worthwhile reflecting here because there have been now three or four meetings that I've watched where I would say are a glaring display of a lack of acumen within the organization from our general manager and his ability to partner or work with the board to generate an outcome. What was said at the beginning of this meeting was something along the lines of, I had partnered with two of the board members. Well, I can guess who two of those board members were who had partnered with this. And I think that that's a shame. I think that there should actually be a little bit more public dialogue that's taking place, and that this isn't the way that this should happen. So that's just my two cents.
Thank you, Mr. Nugent. Haley, the next speaker, the next member of the public.
Julie?
Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm not too sure if you can see us. Can you see us or just hear us? Okay.
We see a succulent.
Okay, great. Well, I am so sorry that we're coming in at the time we are. We've actually been 10 miles up on Angel's Landing in Zion National Park, and this was so important that we absolutely made sure to get our way down to reception to make this call.
Julie, are you calling in with regard to the skate park or with regard to the grants?
Well, in regards to the skate park, but it's certainly grant related. So certainly guide me as to when would be appropriate to speak.
Well, I have a feeling that you're calling in on item 7D, which we haven't addressed yet. I hesitate to say that this will be happening shortly, but if you could just be patient and either hang on the phone or call back in about 10 minutes or something like that, and hopefully we'll be moving on to the next agenda item. Are you okay with that?
I'm absolutely okay. I'll check back in. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So, Director Howell, you wish to make a comment?
I wonder if we can't move. I'm trying to think of how to phrase a motion, but if we could move to adopt the suggested policy as a policy that relates only to the SST project. Two things. Amend this to so that it applies only to the SST project. And then in addition, as a secondary aspect of the motion, to ask the policy committee to come forward at the soonest possible opportunity with a grant policy that's more general. I'm not quite sure how to word that, but if we could squeeze that all into one motion, it would seem like maybe that would get us off of this and get us to move forward.
I would second that.
Well,
okay.
A motion and a motion.
Okay. I guess we could have.
So you're making a motion to change this item.
What
you're doing.
In other words, what I want to do is amend this. I want to move the adoption of an amended, what's here, and in, maybe it's two motions. I think we can do two motions on one agenda item, can't we, Mr. Carmel?
Yes. Okay.
First motion would be to adopt this with an amendment, and so I lost it. Hold on. I can tell you. I think it just takes one phrase.
I can tell you where I think it should go.
Oh, well, even better, Tim. Why don't you, Council, please, you tell us.
In the subject line, the policy, it should be policy : CCSD policy on applying for grants for the SST project. And then in the policy itself, in the first line, not the purpose, but the policy section, when submitting requests for grant funding for the SST project.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Carmel. So I so move, and then I'll put the other one as a second motion after we get this one.
So I would second. I want to get some clarification though before we take a vote, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because I've not been to these meetings about the SST, so when you were talking about Mr. Carmel, this the line when submitting requests for grant funding for an SST project, would that be phrasing that right? I just don't know. I don't know the way the terminology works. I don't even know what SST stands for. But I just want to allow for if it's in the, I mean, do we have a plan that's called the SST plan, or is it this SST program, or
I see.
You know what I'm saying? I want to make sure that there's clarity there. And that's actually, I seconded it because I still would prefer for this to go through the policy committee, come back with an amendment and not pass this today. But I seconded it so we could have discussion.
I can probably answer your questions, President Farmer, if you would like.
Go right ahead.
The SST is a program that PG&E is bringing for us. At the completion of the IGA, they will go ahead and they will recommend and give us hard figures on what to do. So we would be applying for grants for those projects that would fall under the SST program.
Okay.
So there may be a grant that we would apply for a specific one of those nine projects. So that needs to be the clarity on the thing, because that may be the way we have to apply for grants.
So, Mr. President?
Director Howell, you've kind of gotten us in a little slight bit of a quandary here, so go right ahead.
I think we got it. So I think the answer would be, we just make the wording for SST, let's see, projects related to the SST program. How's that? Is that clear enough?
Included.
Included in the SST program.
Yeah.
That's pretty specific, because that means each ECM, we know what it is, we've talked about it. Okay, that works, yeah.
And all of those items are on our CIP list. So there's embedded information.
Yeah, they're embedded in the budget process and the whole thing. So.
Right, and it's been thoroughly discussed. I'm sorry.
That's good clarification.
So, Director, Vice President Steidel, did you wish to make a comment, or you just took your hand down?
I will take my hand down now. Yes.
So, I just want to make sure that it's clear that this is that the current policy without changes is still going to be intact, and then we're making an additional policy that applies only to projects within the SST program.
Yes.
Okay, I'm okay with that if we leave the original as the original, and then we're just adding those paragraphs essentially again, but with the changes.
Yeah.
Haley, okay. I think considering how twisted and turned this particular item has become, I'm going to allow a member of the public to it. And I hope nobody. Yes, Director Howell.
I moved the previous question.
And pardon me?
There's already a motion on the floor.
A motion on the floor.
I moved the previous question. In other words, I want us to vote.
Haley, go ahead and call the roll.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
No.
So,
are you going to make a second motion, Director Howell?
Yes. I have to be recognized first, though.
We all recognize you, Director Howell. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. So I move that this item 6A, what I want to say is I want to table the issue and have the policy committee come back with a policy. Can someone else word that for me? Because we talked about it, but I don't know quite how to say it.
You know, you just said 6A, I think. Hopefully we're on 7C. Really,
that was wrong. Let's see. I have it. I move that the existing policy on grants remain in effect while the policy committee reviews it and, in cooperation with the general manager, comes up with a new policy that hopefully will... comes up with a new policy, period. Does that work? And let's give them a time limit too, in a month. Come back. Otherwise, it'll take 3 months.
Director Howell, maybe I'm just way off base, and maybe I'm the only one that's confused here. Is it a possibility just to vote on item 7C without any additional revisions or additions or anything like that?
If we were doing that, then it would just be totally rejected. What we're offering is a compromise. Otherwise, it will fail. That would be the other way to go. But we've already passed, the one motion has been passed. But no, that wasn't my intention. The intention was to modify what was being discussed in such a way that business can move forward, and yet the CCSD's policy on grants can still be examined. So that was my intent. Did that help any clarification at all?
Well, it may be clear to everybody else, but it's not to me.
Okay.
And I may be the only person here asleep at the wheel, but we heard public comment with regard to where authority lies with regard to ultimate decision making on grant funding, which is the ratepayers' monies. And it just seems to me that we should be voting on this particular item, which is about, giving staff and the general manager more authority in this area versus, as Director Rice said, seems like about an hour ago, six heads are better than one, or probably more, because it would give more opportunity for the public to make comment and be informed. So maybe I'm just way off base here, but that's still where my head is at. So what am I missing?
Well, the motion that was taken was to provide a method for being able to handle grants that were specific to the SST project, period. It wasn't talking about grants genetically or generically. It was just talking about grants that may need to be pursued for the SST program. And that was, there was a motion put forward and that was voted on. I believe what Director Howell is trying to do, and please correct me if I'm misinterpreting this, but as it relates to the statement of revision for agenda item 7C to approve revisions to the policy on applying for grants, that he was making a second motion that for the general policy on grants, that this be referred to the policy committee and they be tasked with bringing back a review of the general policy on grants. Is that a correct statement, Director Howell?
Yes, thank you. That's perfect. I couldn't have said it better myself. You said it much better than I did.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
So in other words, and I feel as if I'm like, let me just ask, make this statement. You know, as president of the board right now, it seems like we're not even dealing with item 7C as it was originally stated. And that this is, we are actually taking this back to the policy committee. Is that correct?
Yeah.
If the second motion passes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So
was there a second?
Was there a second?
Haley, on Director Howell's motion. For the, sorry, are you saying, was there a second motion or was there a second to the motion?
Was there a second to the motion?
To the second motion?
There was not a second to the second motion.
So is there a second to that second? Do we know what the second?
The second motion is to send the grants policy back to the policy committee, right?
Yeah.
And there's no second.
I'll second.
I will second that motion.
Oh, we have a second. Mr. Chairman.
Director Howell, yes, go right ahead.
It might be appropriate now that we have a new motion on the floor and we've changed a little bit of the nature of the discussion. May I suggest that we see if there's any public comment again on this, if that's all right.
I see one hand raised that can hopefully elucidate this. I believe I'm using the right word. Haley, please go ahead and call on the person in the public.
Sure. Elizabeth Benhausen would like to speak on this item.
Thank you very much, President Farmer. I want simply to point out that in the action you just took on the first motion, which was seconded and adopted 4-1 regarding the SST projects. In the capital improvement projects that come under wastewater and the PG&E program, which will be taken up by PG&E, there's hardly any project under $25,000. And so as a member of the public, it was very unclear to me just now whether you just gave the general manager the authority over projects that cost more than $25,000. It was implied in your action. Thank you.
Would anyone on the board or our legal counsel wish to comment? I know we don't necessarily have to, but how about some clarification on Ms. Bettenhausen's question?
I believe the general manager has authority to spend up to $25,000. So that's what you'd be talking about, matching up to $25,000.
And that doesn't change the... But as was mentioned by Ms. Bettenhausen, all of the projects on the SST are you know, in excess of 25,000, certainly. So,
no, I believe we're talking only about the matching component.
Right. But okay.
Isn't that right, General Manager?
Yes.
That's correct. And any of these matches, anything with a match has to come before the board for approval anyway.
And it would be my guess that any SST item, if it had matching funds, would potentially be in excess of $25,000. I don't know that that's a...
Yeah, we're probably talking about maybe close to $1 million, something like that.
Not in matching funds.
No, not in matching funds, but it'd be a considerable amount of ratepayers' money. But this is still something, obviously, that we need to pursue with regard to the PG&E SST program for the well-being of the wastewater plant, as well as what's needed in the water department. So someone please remind me where we are right now. We're about to take a vote on this revised agenda item, is that correct?
Haley,
we took a vote on the revised agenda item already, and that passed 4-1. I believe that Director Howe was then addressing the idea that for the general policy related to grants, that we...
We take that back to the policy committee.
Right, that the existing policy be referred to the policy committee right. For review.
So we haven't voted on that yet.
We have a motion and a second without a vote yet, correct?
Thank you.
And
so,
Haley?
I'd
like to speak.
Can I speak to the motion?
I'm sorry, Director Rice, I didn't see your hand up. Go right ahead.
I heard somebody else's voice. I wanted to make sure they didn't. So this is one of our newer policies, the grant policy, as it still remains unrelated to SST, was just passed in 2015, which doesn't seem like that recent. But when you compare to a lot of the other policies that we don't even have in existence yet, I do not think it's a good use of the policy committee's time, because I think the current... with what we just added for the exception for the SST projects, which the board has already in concept approved because we're moving forward with those projects as part of this whole program. I don't think that it has to be, I don't think it has to go to the policy committee, because I don't think the changes need to be, any changes need to be made to the main part of that grants policy.
Well, we already have a motion and a second. Director Howell, would you wish to comment, please?
Just to remind that the policy committee could examine the whole thing and decide that the policy was perfectly good as it stands. That is an option. They might, and they've done that before. So they might very well say, this is good, we don't need to do anything, but to give them the opportunity. And I wanted to give the general manager a chance to interact with some of the folks just to see about issues of streamlining whilst maintaining all the important controls that are in the old policy, and it may not be possible, as I said. So just because it goes to the policy committee doesn't mean that the policy will necessarily change.
John, I think Director Howell wanted a response from you.
No, that's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. No, I fully support this. As Director Howell knows, I've been moving through everything in the district since I got here, looking at more efficiencies, business automation. And so, you know, more hands on deck to look at this is a good thing. And to Director Howell's point, I'm not trying to get around any controls at all here. I want the board to have all the controls it has. I'm just looking to, again, minimize three times, if sometimes a grant might have to come to the board three times. That means three staff reports, three reviews from different people, including the chief, the district council, for every one of those reports, and all that stuff adds up.
Government's not supposed to be efficient. Not supposed to go fast.
True, true.
Not supposed to be wasteful, but it's not supposed to go fast. It's supposed to be deliberative. That's the whole point. I want to see it three times. I want to see it four times. Until you hear something six times, you don't remember it. We know people miss meetings. If we have it three times before the board, more chances that somebody who wouldn't have otherwise heard about it, like, for example, when the skate park got closed, we said, how many times did we say that we were going to close the skate park because it was dangerous? Mom. And how many people didn't know? So I don't think three times. It might feel like a lot to you, Mr. Weigel, but I don't think three times is that many times.
Well, I will say that I think that the things that the GM Weigel was annotating wasn't so much a function of necessarily of time. He was talking to the infrastructure support that ends up having to be generated each time that happens. And if part of what his responsibilities are tasked with making the district staff as streamlined as possible, and the focus was to that point, then I think that was all about what was being expressed. I may be wrong, but that's how I took it.
Yeah. That's okay. All right, Haley, will you read the motion that I believe has been made and seconded?
Yes. Director Howell moved that the existing policy remain in effect while the policy committee reviews it, and in cooperation with the general manager, come up with a new policy in 1 month.
Thank you, Haley.
You're welcome.
Could you take a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
That was a no.
Was that a no? Okay. Vice President Seidel?
Yes.
President Farmer?
Aye. And I'd also, if nobody minds, that first motion that I voted no on, just out of exasperation, you can change that to a yes. Thank you.
No, you can't.
Oh. I can't? All right.
Tim's shaking his head.
Thank you, Tim.
Sorry.
It's not a problem. I'll just have to call John Weigel and Jim Green and apologize. Or at least John Weigel. Excuse me. John Alchin. Pardon me. All right. I cannot believe this, but by the way, Director Howell, I don't know whether to thank you or not for everything that we just kind of went through, but I do want to express appreciation for the still life painting that you're living in today during this meeting, which is rather soothing while you're up there talking. So I just wanted to make that comment in case anybody wants to make that observation when we get to item 7D and you make a comment on that. So we're now moving to item 7D, and General Manager Weigel, if you would introduce this item, please.
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 7D is discussion regarding recreational opportunities for Cambria. Staff is recommending that the board discuss parks and recreation policy and provide policy guidance and parameters to the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space, or PROS, Commission so that it may consider future projects in support of the Cambria community. I've added some additional information about pending grant that we are eligible for. And while that's a driver, we're not here to, the staff recommendation is not to discuss that grant. That will follow board guidance. Really, it's the purpose of this is to have a discussion so that the board, so that the PROS Commission can understand and take some direction from you as it considers various projects that it's got on its plate.
All right, thank you. Let's take this to the board for some brief discussion, and then perhaps the PROS chairman, Mr. Niffen, might want to make a comment or two. So anybody on the board wish to...
Do you want to bring in Julie to speak now? She was going to speak about skate.
Thank you. Julie, I requested that she call back. I don't know if she's if she stayed on the phone or not. I don't see her at this moment calling in. My apologies for that. I do see that we have a member of the public that wishes to speak. Does anybody on the board wish to make any comment before we go to that person? No? Okay. Well, Director Hallyus, you have your hand up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. A very brief question. I would actually like to hear from Mr. Niffen on this before I make any comment. In fact, I would really like to know from him why we have this on our agenda.
Ooh. I would say you would need to ask Mr. Weingold that. I didn't really put it on the agenda.
Thank you.
Well, did you wish to redirect your question, Director Hall?
No, that really did. I just needed to know where this is coming from.
I mean, I can talk a lot and try to make a conversation out of it, you know. Well, I guess it's a long story. It starts, you know, when we purchased the ranch and what our direction is as a community as towards active recreation and the general plan and the updates and all of those documents and the whatnot. Go ahead, Director Howell. Is that?
Yes, thank you. What I'm really asking is, it didn't come across quite the way I meant.
Yeah.
It isn't that it's not that I don't want to deal with it, but I was really relying on the PROS Commission to make recommendations. And it sounds to me like we're trying to turn that around the other direction. And I don't feel competent, actually.
That's why I'm
a little concerned that this isn't coming from you.
Well, no, if I may be so bold, is I see maybe a little bit of it wrapped up in the previous agenda item where there was discussion in regards to grants. I am not clear on the $177,000 grant from the state. It looks to me, and I've discussed it with a board member, that this is grant money that they're giving to us, that we're not applying for, which that we just have to fill out the appropriate documents, and it's a matching grant, so there will be money requested on our part. But if we come up with $35,000, we're going to be guaranteed $177,000. If that is the case, then I think it's something that we should pursue. That kind of led to the question, whoa, if we're granted $177,000 from the state, what direction do we want to go in? The PROS feels like we're pretty clear on where we want to go and what's going on. There is discussion between the bathroom and the skate park and the minutia of both of those projects, but that seems to be where we're at in a nutshell.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve. Did anybody else wish to make a comment from the board? I see Director Howell once again has his hand up, and then we're going to go to public comment because I see a couple of people that had public comment have dropped off. So go ahead, Director Howell.
I see the problem. And I guess where my concern here is that I'm having some difficulty because the way the agenda item is worded, we can't really take any action on this. Yeah. So I'm a little puzzled. And since it's really, I think, I can only speak for myself, but I expect PROS to tell me what the PROS Commission thinks the priority should be. I don't feel competent to set priorities for PROS. That's why we have you guys over there. And I want to remind you that at the time of the schoolhouse movement, where there was a great deal of lobbying to put the schoolhouse in one place, PROS Commission wanted it somewhere else. And at that time, I said, I will not second guess the PROS Commission on this, even though I was kind of in favor of the other location. So again, we have a commission. They're supposed to be doing a certain kind of work. And if it really is an issue of saying, yeah, go for the grant money, then this really needs to come back to us so that we can vote on it. But my last statement, and then I'll totally shut up. Just for all the folks out there, especially the skaters, I'm only speaking for myself, but if there was a question of a skate park coming before the board, I would definitely vote for it. So I don't want them to hear that, know that. But unfortunately, we can't even vote for that today. So anyway, that's where I am on that. Sorry. You've heard enough of me now. Thanks.
We have two members of the board that wish to comment. So go ahead, Director Pearson, and then I'd like to go to the member of the public, Director Pearson, then Vice President Steidel.
I think that we need to give the PROS Commission a little bit more direction as to what we want them to bring back to us as recommendations. I'd like to see a priority list, and I would really like to see some better budgeting of exactly what these things are going to cost. I don't know how they go about getting that, but I've heard that the skate park will cost $70,000, and I've heard that it costs $300,000. Those aren't figures that we can deal with. We have to have better resolution than that, because otherwise we can't put things in our budget at those kind of disparities. So what I would really like to do is just ask PROS to come up with a list. This is our list. Our number one priority list on the priority list is bathrooms. Number two is skate park. Number three is this. Number four is that. And it's all in compliance with the community park plan, or their recommendation is that we revise the community park plan, since it's already been somewhat revised anyway. The dog park isn't where it was planned to be. So I'd like to get the PROS Commission to give us a much better idea as to how much money they want to spend on what items during what budget year. That's where I would like to see it go. And I think they need to have a robust discussion, not only between themselves, but also with the community, as to what those priorities really ought to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Vice President Steidel.
Thank you, President Farmer. I think that, this is a guess on my part, but I'm thinking that the idea of this grant funding may have initiated some conversation that started to talk to, okay, well, if we've got the possibility of this money, you know, what should we be spending it on, and which one goes first, and, you know, just general conversation in that way. And I think it kind of spiraled. And I have to agree with Director Pearson in that, number one, I think that the funding grant needs to be looked at it more specifically and wholly in what it's offering, because we need to understand, for instance, if this grant is working on a milestone basis, so that we're having to front load and pay out certain kinds of things and then get money reimbursed to us. That's a whole different ballgame than the idea of getting a coin in hand and being able to go forward with something. So we really need to understand what is that, and if that's something that's even practical for us to consider. And then I think I agree that we do need to have a priority of the things that are currently identified by PROS, and that actually that needs to be discussed with the community as a whole to understand if that list needs to be expanded or should be expanded based on the master plan that was in place, and also the whole ranch, the Fiscalina Ranch Preserve projects. And then the next piece is, and we need to get a much better idea of what the dollars are. I don't know where these quotes for what it's going to cost have come from. I don't know who generated them. I don't know what lays at the base of them that gives them any, you know, real something to hang your hat on, that they're in real term cost. And so I think we need to understand that and get that defined much better. So I think we've got two different issues going on. I think we need to, as an aside, understand what this grant money is and how we go about it and what it, how it's going to, how and whether we can actually take advantage of it, if it's practical. But need some priorities, need a better idea of whether that covers everything the community is looking for and how we need this, and then get some good hard numbers associated with what the cost of those would be individually. That's my suggestion. Okay.
All right, thank you, Vice President Steidel. And Haley, we have a member of the public that would wish to speak.
Yes, Elizabeth Benhausen would like to speak on this item.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I sent a memo to the board and to the general manager about this item 7D in your agenda today. I won't read it all, but I want to read a couple of paragraphs, by the way, and I won't read it, but I assume that you have all, I sent along the links to the law that was passed. I sent along the link to the allocation of the $117,000 within the rubrics of this law. So I think it sounds like Director Steidel, you might well have looked at that, which I think is a wonderful thank you. This is from my memo. This discussing and providing need much more preparation than is given on this page in the agenda. The money in the 2018 Act is not restricted to use in parks and recreation only. For example, forest protection would come within the Act's rubrics, especially as an educational program for underprivileged students, which parenthetically we certainly have in this town. This might also be an excellent opportunity finally to fund the Cambria Forest Management Plan, which has been sitting there without funding for a long time. And so at the end of my memo, I suggest looking to see whether the PROS Master Plan is still in effect. I don't know. I've now seen a copy of it, but I don't know if you consider it still binding legally. How does it guide the work of PROS? Does the Fiscalina Ranch Preserve Management Plan take precedence over the PROS Master Plan? I said plan. In summary, the recommendation by staff in this agenda item is premature. The action I recommend to you, 1, assign analysis to the Standing Committee on Resources and Infrastructure and to Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission, and 2, request analysis from Friends of the Fiscalina Ranch Preserve regarding the law and the allocation. You are in no position to take any action on this agenda item today, and I thank you once again for letting me as a member of the public make my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. You know, I see there's a couple of members of FFRP board. And I saw Ms. Connolly had her hand up earlier. Kitty, did you wish to make any comment at all?
Only slowly, because I'm figuring it out here. Can you hear me?
Sure. You go right ahead.
Well, I've been on the PROS committee commission, Steve? Going to their meetings for a while now. And I think Director Pearson is right that it would be really helpful to have a discussion among the members about what are the overarching priorities. I think there are a lot of things that they've been clear about, but I think it's a good thing to talk about moving forward, especially when you have, I mean, I think it hasn't been very pressing because there hasn't been any money, but now that there's money, it's worth being moving it forward as a priority. So I support that. I also am quite in favor of development of the community park on the East Ranch.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the comments that were made by Ms. Connolly and especially Ms. Bettenhausen, as well as members of the board. And hopefully, Mr. Niffen, I noticed you're not the only member of the PROS committee to have attended this meeting. So you have a bit to digest and come back to us with perhaps the report in September that you'll be making. So,
President Farmer, I have some comments to make. I've had my hand up.
No problem. I wasn't ignoring you. Go right ahead.
So, my individual feeling on things is, if you think you're going to get a big wad of money drop in your lap, it's good to have a plan ready for when you get it. Just looking into this specific grant, first let me start with this. Thank you for Dr. Bettenhausen looking into this some. And I wanted to let her know that a forest management plan grant is not mutually exclusive with this grant. There are several different categories. This specific one that's mentioned here, which is not part of the item. The item is something that, in my opinion, should be folded in with the long-range strategic planning for the district as a whole. I don't think we can give clarity of direction at this point. It seems like the excitement is about, well, we might get this money. Well, that would be great if we actually met the criteria. And just a quick glance at the scoring criteria, which recently came out, I'm sorry to say, it doesn't look too good. Because you can get money to renovate an existing park, but expanding an existing park or creating a new one, you get more points. We have to have a ratio of less than 3 acres of parkland per 1,000 residents. I think we do want to find ways to fund, whether it's a skate park, whether it's continuing the plan for the East Ranch. I personally feel like PROS is on top of things. It might be a good idea to get essentially, not an inventory, but essentially here, what are the assets that this community is responsible for, that the district is responsible for maintaining? Because I think that we all have differing levels of understanding what those things are, because I know there's a lot of single open space lots out there that are under conservation, but those don't count for a lot of things that we might want to do. There's only going to be 20% of the total amount that's going to be funded statewide that's going to go for renovation projects. So 80% are for new parks. I don't think this is guaranteed money, and that's not what the item is. I also don't feel like, since we just got the plans that the district has gone through public process and approved for the East Ranch, for the Parks and Recreation Program, I just got those a couple of days ago with the rest of the board. I think having those discussion about those things is important. I also think that we need to keep on the path where we currently are. Mr. Niffen has volunteered and been on part of PROS and been supportive of recreation opportunities in this town for longer than I've lived here. And I've lived here a long time. So I want to be supportive of what happens, but I think it's incumbent upon the board to really understand what facilities and recreation opportunities we have and what things prior boards wanted to see happen that are no longer going to happen because we don't have money or because we just can't do it or whatever reason. It might be an opportunity to have kind of a Parks and Rec 101. So I know that they're looking for more guidance. I think it's a good idea for the board to have those discussions, but I think they should be done in the context of the larger district.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. So we have about 25 minutes to go till 5 o'clock, and we still have to adjourn to closed session and get public comment on the closed session item. Director Pearson, you wish to make a comment?
Yeah, I'd like the general manager to give us a little clarity on what the $177,000 is, and do we already qualify for that? Just so that we have clarity on that.
So there's a approximately 50-page manual for applying for this money. The 177 comes from a number generated by this initiative, statewide initiative. There's two parts to it. One is based on the number of people in our community, which is how the 177K is derived. And then the other part is loans or grants that you can apply for, but they generally apply for to disadvantaged communities, of which we're not. We had a 3-hour conference call with the state parks group that's basically distributing this money. This 177 is for our use, for some capacity to be determined for our district. And so the program length goes until 2024, but there to President Vice President Steudel's comment, there are milestones on this thing. So there is a sense of urgency in that we need, if where there are certain projects we want to do, we got to get on this to identify them, create a plan, and then track those as it relates to this loan program. The same woman that is our representative to this parks group at the state is the same one who doled out the money to us for the skate park. And so she actually formerly resided in Cambria. She understands our issues really closely here. So the impetus to put this on the agenda was to create a conversation so we can start moving ahead on some potential projects that would fit in into this program. But, you know, as far as the money goes, the money's guaranteed for us. It's now up to us to find a project that fits it.
All right. Does that
help answer your question?
So a question, I'm sorry, President Farmer, I had a question about the funding.
I think it was that question was asked by Director Pearson. Were you? And so
yeah, that answers my question. That's fine.
Thank you. All right, Vice President Steudel, pardon me for interrupting.
Would the monies cover design that we would potentially have to expend funds for to be able to put a project for evaluation?
The project will cover up to 25% of design.
Harry?
Steve, go right ahead.
Yeah, John's response is why I kind of thought it was on the agenda, right? I'm working on the bathrooms. I got my little 20 grand from the county to design our bathrooms. And then John says, hey, Mr. Weingold, sorry, my bad, says, hey, any, you know, what he said to me. And I'm like, whoa, that's pretty big time. I need to ask the whole board, or we should all weigh in on it, right? I don't just want to make the decision on the 177,000. It's like Mrs. Bettenhausen said, oh, what about the Forest Committee? There's a lot of people that would want to weigh in on that question. You know, I'm just leery of grants, but Mr. Weingold thinks it's pretty good. And when you, I was at that 3-hour conference call and it sounded pretty good. I will tell you that. And I've sat in some of these and I'm like, they're never going to give us that money. And I kind of felt like there was a possibility here. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Director Howell, just want to warn you that we have less than 20 minutes to conclude this meeting and go to closed session. So go ahead. Director Howell, have your hand up.
Yeah, sorry. My suggestion would be that Mr. Niffen bring back to us from PROS a prioritized list of all the things that they think would be things that should be taken, that should be done. And but bring that to us so that we can react to it. And also do it in a way so that we can take a vote on it, so you can get some clear direction. But I suggest that would be the next step. And I suggest that we go ahead and move on until that happens. I think we just, yeah. Okay.
Okay. I believe that was Director Pearson pretty much said the same thing, maybe in slightly different wording a little bit earlier. Okay, so if you don't mind, I'm going to conclude this discussion with regard to item 7D and move on to future agenda items. Director Rice, did you have something to offer here, please?
Yes, but I don't remember what it was, and I didn't write it down.
It was something that had to do with a job evaluation.
Oh, that one. Yes. I would like to request that we agendize a job evaluation of the GM. I wasn't able to participate in the full evaluation last time, and we did say we were going to be doing periodic evaluations. I'd like to provide some feedback both to the other directors and to the GM in the context of his performance. Not saying good, bad, I just mean some feedback on his performance generally. I think that it's not out of line to do it sometime in September.
All right. Thank you very much, Director Rice.
If nobody else is interested, are other directors interested? Because, I don't have a problem not having one if I'm the only one that wants to do it.
I'm fine with having that in September, maybe at the second meeting as a closed session.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson. So we will put that on the agenda. So hearing no other future agenda items, I'm going to adjourn this right now Yes, Director Howell?
Ms. May, I'm just questioning whether or not we have the modification to our code 804-100 regarding transfer development credits. I want to be sure that gets on as soon as possible. This is actually a correction to the code. It doesn't change it at all. It just, there's a loophole in there that some folks have already taken advantage of, and I think it needs to be closed.
All right. Thank you, Director Howell. And we'll be getting back with you to get a little bit more concise description of what you'd like, and we'll put it on the agenda.
Mr. President, I've already sent that to you and to Mr. Weingold. I sent it to at least 3 people already. I can do it again, but I want you to know this. I sent forward to everybody, except I didn't send Ms. Director Steidel. Sorry about that. But I already sent that modification to you. It's been more than a month.
President Farmer,
Go right ahead, General Manager Weigel.
Director Howell, I believe we've already got that agendized for September.
Oh, thank you. That's all I wanted to know.
I'm sorry, I didn't remember that. It's been a long meeting. All right, so now going to adjourn to closed session. Do we have any public comment on closed session, Haley?
I do not have any public comment on closed session.
All right, thank you. So we're going to adjourn to closed session, and we'll be back together in about 5 minutes. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone that attended this meeting and all the public comment that was made that was very helpful. And everyone out there, no matter who you are, stay safe, be well, and wear a mask, and be kind to everyone you come in contact with. And let's all be a little bit more compassionate as well. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.